Shalom, and welcome to In the Beginning. My name is Shmuel Bowman, and I am a Torah scribe.
Hey, Yoav.
Hey, Abba.
Here we are.
Here we are.
Okay, so Pirkei Avot, just in case anybody is joining now. So Pirkei Avot, it has to do with ethics or wisdom of our teachers, of our rabbis.
Right.
I was thinking a lot about this recently, actually. Our rabbis, I'm talking about like thousands of years, you know, over 2,000 years of a connection with our rabbis really defines us as Jews. And it's really important because, you know, I've been thinking a lot about, you know, all the different people in the world. And the fact is that our rabbis, I mean, we're still connected with them and they're very much alive for us today.
Yeah, for sure.
What's also interesting is there was no one particular, like one rabbi, you know, we don't have a pope or something. You know, you can have like a Beit Midrash, a house of study full of different rabbis, full of different students.
Right.
And they look like they're arguing and yelling at each other. And sometimes they're, you know, they're slamming their hands down on the table and they're all doing this for the sake of, I think, trying to get to the truth of the matter. And
sure.
There's a certain respect.
It's a machloket.
It's a machloket. In other words, a disagreement. L'shem shamayim.
L'shem shamayim.
Yeah.
The good kind.
The good kind. It's a disagreement for the sake of heaven.
Yeah? Right.
And it's very interesting. Where isn't this idea of like there's some grand rabbi or something that comes along and it's like, oh, okay, that's the way we Jews are thinking now. It's so weird, isn't it? If you think about it. I mean, there's no one, I mean, obviously there's guidelines, very, very firm guidelines in terms of as long as you're within those guidelines, that's what it is to be Jewish.
Right. It takes a lot of self-esteem for a religion to allow that, I think.
Right.
You got to be sure that you have the truth. Otherwise, you won't let people ask as many questions as they want to ask.
Well, this is the thing. This is exactly my point. In other words, when you're comfortable, when you're really comfortable with the truth, when you're really comfortable with that kind of wisdom, when you're comfortable with the fact that whatever, we have this very intimate connection with our Creator, with God, then you can relax, with being able to have disagreement and discussion. It's very, very interesting that, it's really about, sharpening the question. So I think a lot of the discussions that happen amongst the rabbis have to do with getting the question even sharper and more correct. What do you mean by this? Define your terms, you know,
sure.
Until you get to such clarity. It's really, really quite amazing.
It is. And I think, speaking of like intimate connection, in this case, it's between a person and his God, but the fact is that it's called Pirkei Avot, is the Perkim of our fathers. It's not like of our teachers and our rabbis. There's like a cozy feeling you get when you study Torah, which is different than like when you study math.
Right, right.
Even if you like math. And there are people like that out there.
Yes,
I know,
yes,
some of them are listening to.
Yes, they may. That. And we like them. And we like them.
We like them. And they're good people.
That's right.
But the cozy feeling that you get with, and that's something else. There's a different relationship. Someone who teaches you Torah is like a family of yours. He's like your father. It's something a little bit more intimate.
It's mishpoch. It's family. It's very, very true. So it's funny. It's interesting that we call Pirkei Avot when it really has to do with these rabbi or our teachers teaching, and we're calling them in a sense kind of like little nuggets of ideas and like guidance, advice from our. From our fathers. Really incredible.
Beautiful. Yeah.
So that's what we're into. And as we have discussed in previous episodes, and I do encourage, if you are joining us for the first time, welcome.
Welcome aboard.
And maybe listen back to maybe last week or the week before, just to kind of get caught up. Why not? Couldn't hurt.
We're not getting any percentages from this.
No, we're not.
Just lots of pleasure. And this is in memory of my Zeta, your Abba, speaking of Pirkei Avot, of Yitzchak Ben Yisrael, Zecher Tzadik Livracha.
Amen. We are in chapter 1, verse 3. And we're starting off, actually, as I had a chance to look at this. And by the way, I will be putting the link to the Sepharia in the show notes so that you can go right there and you can literally read what we're reading in front of us. Or if you prefer the good old-fashioned way, get yourself an actual hardcover book, Pirkei Avot. They're widely available at your local Judaica shop, or you can even order it online. But if you'd like to take a look at what we're looking at, we're on Sepharia. And the first word that comes to mind does not look like a Hebrew word, interestingly enough.
No, it doesn't.
It doesn't. It's the word Antigonus. Sounds very Greek, actually. What's this Greek name word happening here? Let's take a look at it. Antigonus ish soko. Kibam shimon et tzadik. Antigonus. A man, he's from Soko.
Sounds like Soho. Maybe he's from New York.
Maybe he's from New York. Or England. There's a Soho in London. Yeah. Too. And he is receiving the Torah from Shimon HaTzadik. We talked about Simon the Righteous in the previous one.
Yeah, we're continuing the lineage of the Torah from Sinai throughout all the generations. And now we reached Antigonus, who's now holding the torch.
Okay. By the way, I'm going to do something really interesting. I encourage you, if you have Safari, you can look at this. I'm clicking on Antigonus. And lo and behold, and Safari is giving us a little bit of a bio. Yeah,
How about that?
Yeah, you get a bio. You get the bio. And the bio says as follows. Antigonus was the leader after Shimon HaTzadik. His tenure coincided with the strengthening of Greek cultural influence among the Jews preceding the Hashmonai, the Hasmonean revolt, and the Hanukkah story. Some of his students misunderstood his teachings and founded the Sadducee movement. In other words, the movement of Jews who did not accept the rabbinic authority. So that's
the dangers of being, I guess, too open and too exposed.
Is you could have some rebellious students.
Yeah.
That's for sure. Anyways, it's kind of neat to kind of like click on these things and get the bio. So now we know a little bit of Antigonus, and that may explain also his Greek name as well, because he's living in a time when Greek influence in the land of Israel was reaching quite the height.
I think it's so important to know about the people we're learning from, because that could give us context for what they're going to say, what place that comes from. So I'm interested to see that.
This is something that Zeta, my dad, was really super interested in, because he was also a historian. He knew world history. Oh, man. He would like inhale history. And then he would be very happy to then share what he learned and talk about it. And so for him, history was important. It was important to understand the context, as you say, of where these ideas came from. They didn't happen in a vacuum. They came from somewhere, and often from the environment in which these people lived.
Yeah.
Okay, let's see what he has to say. You want to take it from there?
Sure. Hu haya omer, al tiyu ha'avadim ha'meshamshim et harav al menat lekabel pras. Don't be like the servants who I guess provide service to their master to get a reward. Ela hevu chavadim asher meshamshim et harav shelo al menat lekabel pras v'hi mora shamayim alechem. So instead, you should be like servants who aren't expecting a reward, and have the, how would you say, mora, fear? I don't like that word really. It's like respect.
Right. It can be defined as, some people I have heard in the classic translations, not classic, but many translations, as the fear of heaven. But you're right. Mora is maybe, as you say, more of deep respect or awe.
Yeah.
Right. Or a sense of like, it's kind of like, I'm going to take this really seriously.
Right.
Know? It's like, I'm going to, you know, before I walk into that, you know, into that particular factory, I'm going to make sure my hazmat suit is on, because otherwise I could be fried to a crisp.
Right.
I don't know if that's fear. It's more a sense of like precaution and awe and taking the matter very seriously. That could be one way of looking at the word mora.
For sure. And I think, I mean, I'm reminded of the Tanya, a Hasidic literature written about 350 years ago by Rabbi Shneur Zalman from Liadi. And he discusses the two types of yira, the two types of, you could say, this fear of heaven. There's a lower yira and there's an upper yira, the higher yira. And the lower yira is what Antigonus is warning us not to be like. Don't be like that servant who worships their master to get a prize. Don't walk around in this world and in this attitude of, I will be a good Jew, I'll do the mitzvahs, because then I will get a reward. And if I don't, boom, I'm going to be struck by lightning. This is a kind of attitude that was more relevant, you know, years and years ago. I think also when people's minds weren't as developed and you know, intellect and emotional world wasn't as developed, that was kind of the world they lived. Fear of,
Maybe they lived in a world in which if you did something wrong, you actually did get very seriously punished by the authorities.
True. Exactly. Or by your parents or by your teachers.
You steal something, you get your hand chopped off, you get locked into jail, or you get harsh punishments for doing something, contrary to the rules. So maybe there is that sense of harsh kind of like punishment that may existed that we now maybe have a different understanding about with the, with rights and with advances in society.
Sure. Yeah. And it's interesting that Antigonus, the progressive man he was, is able to say, I know that humanity is now in this state of mind. Let's jump 2000 years ahead, shall we? I think we should be doing. According to the Tanya, a higher level of fear of heaven is you're doing the right thing, not because you're afraid of a punishment or because you're expecting a reward, but from a deep understanding of how great your master is. You just don't want to not do something that he wouldn't want you to do.
So, right. So he's also connecting it. He's connecting the fear of heaven. And in other words, it's like there's the and, right? Whenever you have an and again, Zeta and I, my dad and I talked about this a lot, the letter Vav. I think I almost venture to say that was my dad's favorite Hebrew letter.
Wow, really?
Yeah, because the letter Vav, Va, is a connecting letter.
Right.
And it basically connects concepts and ideas. Right. And he was a person of connecting. And so he liked it when that happened. He also understood as a lawyer, and you can understand this as a graduate of law school, that every single letter and every single word has implications and meaning. And often in contracts, for example, and he would tell me this, the placing of the word and, versus say the word with, may have legal implications in a contract.
For sure.
So I think it was one of his favorite letters in the Hebrew alphabet. And so the fact is that the word, there's a above here, right? In other words, it says don't, be like the servants who serve their master without the expectation of receiving a reward. And
it's connected. This is connected to the second part of the sentence.
Right. So it's like, it really reinforces that thing. It's kind of interesting. And as far as the, by the way, I just want to pick up also on something regarding the word fear, or as it's often used, but as you've just presented, it could be a different, it could be awe. Mora vahi mora shamayim aleichem. In other words, and let the fear of heaven be upon you. And I would also substitute the word fear for a different word, and that is the word kind of like acknowledge and respect. Okay. And I'm thinking of, for example, a very common, common phrase that a lot of people know, right? Gam ki ele begeitz samavet lo ira rakia ta imadi, right?
Yeah.
From Psalms?
From Psalms, yeah.
Okay. Even though
when I walk in the valley of death, fear no
evil, for you are with me, right?
Yeah.
Ki ata imadi. So I often think that's kind of interesting because it's like, even though as I walk through the valley of the shadow of death, I will fear no evil, right? And then it goes on about how you've placed a table of my enemies before me, that kind of stuff. So I often think, okay, when you place a table and your enemies are sitting at the table in front of you, you can't go in there with fear.
No.
Okay. If you're going to face your enemies, it's going to be on the battlefield, right? Like we're seeing in Gaza. I don't think that we're not sitting at no tables with Hamas.
Oh, okay? No, definitely not. Some people have the wrong idea in their head as if it's possible to sit at the table with Hamas.
Right. You sit at the table with people who may have been your enemies,
right,
or people who were your enemies and have, in this case, surrendered. Mm. Complete and absolute, complete surrender is what we're expecting from Hamas. And then when those people surrender, imagine that. These were your enemies, and now they've absolutely, completely, what they used to call unconditional surrender.
Right.
Okay. And now you can now put them at that table in front of you, and you have no fear.
Right, which is, by the way, how Gaza surrendered in 1949. There's actually a letter saying unconditional surrender.
Unconditional surrender. Yeah. This used to be a concept a long time ago. Today, for some reason, we think that it's like this, you know, everybody can be, everyone can be a winner here. No, it doesn't work that way. And so when you have people when your enemies have completely surrendered, now they can sit at the table before you and you have no fear. Right. So what does that mean? Lo yira raki atam. I have no fear. Because I'm in the valley of the shadow of death, because my enemies have given up, I've conquered them, and now they're sitting in the table in front of me. So of course I don't have any fear. So what does that mean? I don't have any fear. It means that I have a respect for the situation. All right. So moving back though, I want to touch on this idea of not to be like servants who expect to receive a reward. The word is pras. Okay.
Yeah.
But like those who don't expect to have a pras. Now, I think it's kind of interesting because what is a pras? What do we mean by a reward here?
Well, I mean, if we're talking in the sense of Torah, because this is kind of what we're talking about, these figures pass the Torah to each other, and then they're saying what their key like takeaway is. How do you keep the Torah? So the way he sees the Torah is don't worship God just to get the prize, because many times in the Torah it says the prize, right? Like honor your mother and your father so you live a long life. So I can go into that. I can honor you just hoping that will increase my lifespan. Mm-hmm. And Antigonus is against that idea. He says, go deeper into this. Why did God command you to do this? Well, you know, do that out of that kind of awe.
Right.
Yeah.
So, okay, so that's interesting. So let's use the actual examples that are using. If I was a servant, so I'm going to be serving my master, not for the purpose of expecting a reward or a prize, but, and this is something that I remember from my discussion with my dad, mm-hmm. Zeta, is that he said, that doesn't mean salary. In other words, there's salary.
He would have said sachar if it was salary.
Exactly.
Interesting.
So he said, we discussed this, that it's not saying don't work like the servants who expect a salary, but those who don't expect a salary. No, that's not that at all. You've already received your salary. You're getting your tlush. You're getting your payroll statement at the end of the month.
Yeah.
So you're working. And you're getting your statement. It's okay, Seder. I'm now working. I'm not working for free, but and therefore there's a contract, if you will, between me and my employer. And I'm doing my job, and I'm doing it with all my heart, and I'm doing my job with a sense of dedication and devotion, because I'm committed. I'm dedicated to my work, and I'm dedicated to my employer, not because I'm looking for an extra tip, or I'm not looking for that. You know, that special vacation that maybe if I, you know, act especially nice.
So the prize is like a bonus. It's like
prize like a bonus. Exactly.
Unexpected bonus.
Yeah. Like, so I think that's kind of interesting. In other words, the relationship is a fair one. Hmm. I think it would almost be, and I think one of the things I think what Zeta and I talked about with my dad and I talked about was it would be unrealistic to say, no, don't just work for, you know, for free. No, that's not the reciprocal relationship here. The reciprocal relationship is that you're working. There's a contract between you. You're getting paid a salary. And that's what you've agreed upon. I'm going to work for you. You're going to be my boss. I'm going to be your servant. Here's the salary. Lovely. Everything is fantastic. Mm-hmm. But you know what? Now I'm really going to go the extra mile because maybe there's a prize in it for me. Maybe there's a bonus in it for me. And he's coming along and he's saying, no, you've already got your deal. You've already made your deal. There's already a covenant. Stick to the covenant, mm-hmm. and do it just because, just because you want to do it. And I guess that last part, and let the fear of heaven or let the respect of heaven be upon you. In other words, and understand that you're in the presence of a great power. You know, you're in the presence of a great power. There's awe here.
Right. It's bigger than that. It's bigger than your little stupid prize that you might get.
Right. Exactly.
Right. I like that. And it's realistic because it's not easy being a Jew. You know, it's like Kermit says, not easy being green. It's not easy being a Jew. Right. And you got to hope that what you're doing is going to actually get you somewhere.
Right.
But to have that thing in you that you know, it's almost like that kid who's always trying to get attention from the teacher, and he's not cool. That kid's not cool, you know? And yeah, if you would just take, let's say, school seriously for the bigger cause, like, that would be more honorable.
Well, this is it. Exactly. I think I may mention this before, and again, this may be controversial, so this is our show.
Right, that's right.
I've talked about this before. You know, sometimes when I'm with other people who don't observe Shabbat, okay, mm-hmm. Or don't keep kosher, right?
Yeah.
And it's almost like this, oh, Shmuel, oh, we're going out to this restaurant now, but oh boy, I don't think there's anything on the menu that you can eat. Is there anything on the menu you can eat? Can we try and do something? Can we? And I'm like, oh no, don't worry about it. I'll be bringing my potato chips. Don't worry. I think I got my almonds packed away somewhere. You know, don't worry about it.
Right.
Oh no, but you know, you're gonna miss. Oh no, I gotta miss out. You know, or Shabbat. It's Saturday. It's like, oh yeah, we've got this. Like we're all going out and everything. It's oh, but wait a sec. It's Shabbat for you, isn't it? Oh, you're not going to be able to join us. Oh no, that's is there something you can do about that? I'm truly sorry. And my answer usually is, you know, I get to keep kosher. I get to keep kosher. I get to have this special relationship where I am following these guidelines about, you know, what I put in my body, how I eat, how that works, the blessings beforehand, the blessings afterwards. These are this keeps my connection with God so personal and so intimate, you know. And you're asking me, do I want to eat like at a cracker barrel somewhere? Is like, you know, some chichis or whatever? Or what, yeah,
it's so much bigger than that.
Yeah, come on, it's much bigger than that.
Yeah.
And I have been in situations where, you know, whatever, I have traveled and I get to a place and whatever, I'm like, I'm hungry. And I walk through some airport somewhere and you can smell like the grill, you know, happening. And I'm like, I'm celebrating the fact that I'm hungry. I'm celebrating the fact that I'm going to have my fourth, you know, bag of potato chips.
Amazing.
Or Shabbat. It's like, really, you know, whatever event could possibly you think would be so interesting. And I'm sure it is. And please go and have a great time.
Right.
But I'm inside the Ten Commandments right now.
You know? Yeah.
I mean, I'm busy in the fourth commandment. Fourth commandment?
Yeah.
Honor Shabbat.
Yeah.
Keep Shabbat. I'm busy in the fourth commandment. So I don't know about you, but I'm really happy to be there. You know? As you say,
it's when you put it that way.
Yeah, it's so much bigger, you know. So I think that's what they're talking about. Fear of heaven, and I think it has to do a lot with that awe, that sense of awe, like, whoa, do you know who my boss is?
Right. You know? It's amazing.
I'm waiting around for some prize. I'm not going to do it for some prize. I'm just like blown away that I get to do this, you know, for God.
Right. Right. And I keep going back to Antigonus, the guy with the Greek name that had the students that, you know, went off the derech, as they would say in from circles, like, and he didn't really stay, I guess, in Judaism or Orthodox or whatever that means. And blown away by this guy's like understanding of the Torah, which is so much bigger than those before him. And he's saying there's something about being very conservative that can also keep you small-minded. And something about him is like much more open to the world. And he says, no, 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 this isn't about the price. I know what it says. Read into it. It's bigger than that.
So it's possible, right? So it's possible that his students misinterpreted it and they basically said, oh, do you mean that really it's just about God, and that's, you know, and, right. and we don't
the need substance is more important than form.
Right. And that we don't need all the other trappings of the world and halacha and what guides us and how we measure things and how we, you know, deal with laws and how we deal with everything. We don't need all that. It's just God. And if he were to respond to them, he might be saying, no, 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 that's the focus as to why you do everything.
Right. Right.
Okay. And they may have come along and said, we don't need to do anything else except
exactly
right. The God thing. And that kind of led them astray.
For sure. But I think it was an important stage in Jewish history, and it's important for us to have that. And you know, some people got lost because of it. But imagine if everyone actually understood what that was and also implemented it inside halakha, the Judaism we know today would be so much bigger than ever.
Well, I like how you say that maybe Antigonus kind of like came up with this idea, you know, whatever, 2000, almost 2,200 years ago.
Wow.
With this idea that, you know what, I'm just going to like say it. And in about 2000 years or so, we're going to be talking about it and we're going to be seeing, wow, this is like such important stuff.
Yeah. Yeah. Cause it's amazing. It's just still relevant. It's amazing to me how relevant it is more than ever.
Cool. Well, thank you for this.
Thank you. And I also want to say,
yes,
it's going to be Purim.
Oh,
next week.
Oh my God.
I'm so excited.
Purim. What's Purim?
What's Purim? For me, Purim. So I think a lot
of you on the spot here, right?
You did. And you know what? That's exactly a Purim thing to do. Because Purim is about Megillat Esther. Megillat Esther, Megillah, means the the parchment on which the book of Esther, but it's actually a Megillah. What does Megillah mean? In Hebrew, it means to legalot, means to reveal. And Estel comes from Lehastil. The Talmud asks, where does Estel appear in the Torah? And the answer from the verse, Anochi Aster Astil, God says, I will hide myself. I will be invisible in the world. When you walk around in the world, you're not going to see me. But you're going to have to believe that God is hidden here somewhere. And in the Megillah, it's completely Estel. God's name is not mentioned once. We say that every time HaMelech, the king, is mentioned, we're referring to God. But you can read this book, and it looks like it's about politics. Oh, did you hear the king got really drunk and executed his wife because she wouldn't show up and whatever? Oh, did you hear two of the top guards of the king tried assassinating him? Oh, did you hear this guy became the... This is like stuff you wouldn't usually talk about in synagogue.
Right.
Because it's like politics.
Right. Very Games of Thrones.
This is Game of Thrones, like proper Games of Thrones. And here we are going to read Saturday night, and then again Sunday morning, we're going to read out in shul, in synagogue, the book of Esther, which doesn't have the mention of God in it at all, and we're going to be silent, trying to catch every single word, because it's packed with so much holy, significant meaning. And I think that's exactly it. Megillat Esther is revealing whatever God has hidden in our lives. And if we talk again about how what Antigono said is relevant to us today, Megillat Esther, the Lubavitcher Rebbe says, he quotes the Baal Shem Tov, the founder of the Hasidic movement, and he says, if you read Megillat Esther and you think it's not relevant to you today, you're not Yotze. You did not fulfill the mitzvah of reading Megillat Esther.
Wow.
It has to be relevant. You have to understand that it is revealing what is hidden, the God that is hidden in your life today. And sometimes, like Megillat Esther, there are chapters in your life that are dark and have a bad ending. And there are chapters of your life that you're confused. Ha'il Shushan Navocha, everyone is just confused. And there are chapters in your life that you just can't wait for them to end. And at the end of the day, at the end, you can read back at the chapters of your life, at the Megillat Esther, and understand that throughout the way, God was actually inside it.
Wow. And yeah, it's very interesting when you talk about the idea of the Megillah. Megillah, we talk about it being a scroll, but the fact that you're talking about it being is revealed.
Yes.
So the Megillah the story of Esther, the book of Esther, has to be written on a scroll. And a scroll is, by definition, one long, sewn together piece of parchment.
You know this as a Torah scribe.
It's a Torah scribe. And it gets wound up. And it's very interesting because what happens is you actually wind it up from the left into the right. So when you open it, you start to like peek into, you know, Vayihi b'yamei Achashverosh. You start these in the days of Achashverosh, and you start kind of exposing the information in kind of like in increments as you unroll it. Okay. But what is interesting, and there's a very strong tradition on this, is as you unroll it, as the reader is reading it, you now begin to fold it page over page like an open book.
Wow.
So we go from a scroll, which
is hidden.
You can't read. You cannot read the contents of a scroll. It's completely closed.
Right.
And what you're doing is as you're opening it and beginning to unravel it, you not only unravel it, but you actually fold over the folios, you know, each of the sections, if you will, mm-hmm. and you fold them almost like an accordion.
Wow.
Is the best way to describe it, so that you wind up almost what looks like pages of a book in front of you. So actually the entire story becomes exposed. So by the end of the story, you can literally look back and read what happened, whereas you couldn't at the beginning.
Wow. That is so cool how it physically enacts the idea.
Right, right, right.
That is there.
Yeah, it's very, very special. But I appreciate your giving over that teaching over what Purim is, and really hope that it's a happy holiday.
It's a happy holiday,
and we
need this.
We need this.
After a year like this, it's hopefully we'll also get some deep understanding after this Purim how God was in all of what happened to us this year, and how it's all going to be better.
How it turns out, it changes everything around.
Changes everything around. Everything will turn around.
So I want to wish everybody a happy Purim.
Happy Purim.
All right. See ya.
See ya.
Please join me every week for new ideas, and let's share these secrets together. Shalom. I'm Shmuel Bowman.